accession number 17932, Reel 2.
Arthur Rouse, Reel 2.
The Sammy Sean, that was more wildlife that I was brought because there was more vegetation, not so much shelling had destroyed all the vegetation around that way, so you would get more wildlife. Of course, where other parts where there'd been lots of fighting, you would get less and less. So the Sammy Sean was the quietest part of the front for us. Then I can't remember how long we were up the Sammy Sean, and then you came out and had rest in a rest period, and then you go back up the line, come out, go back like that. I can't remember. The only three really main hills I can remember we went was the Sammy Sean's, that stick in my mind. Hill 355, which in our sector was the biggest hill, and the Hook, although the Hook wasn't in our brigade, but later on when the Duke of Wellington's got hit, we stood by that night, which I remember well, and then we took over from them up the Hook, which was the most frightening place that any soldier in Korea would want to go, I should think. It's a very nasty place.
Why was it so bad?
Well, the Hook was the main, that's why they called it the Hook, was the main place for a breakthrough, which the Chinese tried several times. And that was about the last big battle before the end of the war, which the Dukes went through. Then there was the biggest rest camp was Camp Casey, which was an American built camp, and I suppose we were there a couple of times.
What did that consist of?
That was big tents with the space heaters in for warmth, during the winter. That you're still done training, and even when you come out in reserve, or for a rest period, you're always on standby, although they call it a rest period. But you've still done your training, like I say, or you could go those picture shows and things like that. You'd sit outside to see pictures, when they had a movie on, you'd sit on benches outside under the starlight, freezing cold, but you'd still sit there. Toilets were undercover, but you just sat on a bench side by side to go to the toilet, things like that.
What other facilities were at Camp Casey apart from a cinema?
Shows, things like that, but basic. One of the funniest things I think happened at Camp Casey was our provost sergeant there was a fella called Grantham. Now, what his first name was, I don't know, but he was only a little fellow, and they called him Titch Grantham. And this particular day, there were several of them on the way home. Their time as National Service were up, so they boarded the lorry, and off they went to the station or wherever, I don't know. And it turned out, as they went out the gate, of course they were giving Titch the up your fingers up and shouting all obscenities they could, you little so and so. And when they got to their destination, it was found out that they were sent on the wrong day, so back they came, and you can imagine the rest. Titch had them out on the parade ground and he gave them hell until the following day. One of the things stick in your mind. And then you've done so long in Korea, I think 3 months, 4 months, and then you were allowed to go to Japan on leave. And twice I went to Japan. Once I went in a big American Globemaster, and another time I went in an old Dakota, which was very frightening. I think he missed the runway twice. And then another time I went for 2 or 3 days to Incheon. That was another R&R camp, and it was there that I had my big winter parka stolen. It was so cold at night time I put my parka over my blankets on the bed, and when I woke up in the morning my parka was gone, and in the pocket of my parka was my wallet with some money in, my pay books and photographs of the family, and all they found, funnily enough, was my pay books near the perimeter. All the rest was gone. Two fellas went AWOL, and that's the last I saw of that. When I got back to the Fusiliers, I was put on a charge for losing it and had to pay £5 for a new one, which was quite a bit of money in them days.
Did you know these two?
Of course, you had your money in credit, of course, so they took it over there. No, I didn't know them, no.
Were they British?
Yes, I should imagine they were British, or they must have been British. I don't think there was any other at that time staying there. But I never saw that anymore.
So that was the rest camp at Incheon?
Yeah, the R&R camp. That's where they had the Incheon land, and wasn't it? I don't know much about that, but that was before my time there.
Yes, that was in 1950.
Yeah. Another the Christmas I was there, the Christmas night, I was on one of these standard patrols I was telling you about out on the spur of the hill. It was me, John Fox, Stanley Brown. I forget what the other one was. And we took a bottle of Navy rum out there, and we were toasting our families on Christmas night. Another thing I remember well.
So were you in the front line both in summer and winter conditions?
Yeah. We were up there, like I said, the Christmas. I think the regiment had the Christmas dinner in February, I think. It might have been the end of January or February. We were up the line 6 weeks at that time, which was quite a while, in the winter. Yeah.
Did you, in the line, have to live in conditions of squalor?
Oh, well, you should call it squalor now. You just lived in a hole in the ground, reinforced with timbers over the top, and earth, and to keep the weather out. You had a hole to go through with a blanket draped down to keep out any light. You just had a candle or perhaps a tilly lamp if you were lucky. In the winter, to keep you warm, it was a mixture of petrol and diesel. In a diesel can outside the bunker, you would have a tube running through into your bunker, and you would have an old ammunition box with a little hole cut in it. The feed would come into that, and you had a drip tap on, and the diesel, the mixture, would drip into the tin. You lit that. Very dangerous, but it kept you warm, like a space heater. That's all. Petrol was plentiful. The most precious commodity up there really was water, and I had quite a few bad teeth when I came home, because one of the last things you thought about doing was cleaning your teeth. These South Koreans, well, I mean, we used to call them gooks, which weren't very nice, I don't suppose, but they were very hard work, and they used to cut all the things up, what you needed, up on the backs, all your supplies, your ammunition, water, things like that.
Did you get any other medical complaints apart from your teeth because of the condition?
Well, when I come home, I suffered very badly with piles, which I suppose, hemorrhoids, which I suppose could have been because of the wet, damp conditions, and I had an operation later on for those. And it always stems from that time. So I suppose you could have said yes. But apart from that, I didn't suffer any real ills.
So did that mean you were constipated from the food?
Well, piles is a vein up your back passage, and when you go to the toilet, it's very, very sore. You can have bleeding piles, which relieve the pressure, which I didn't. They were inside, and they gave me a lot of pain until I had my operation.
Did you have any fresh food though? In the
once a week, you had a cooked meal. The rest of the time was American sea rations, which was a box. They had three tins of different meals. There was a chocolate bar, cuckoo. There was toilet tissues, a jelly bar, packet of fags, tissue paper, things like that. They were quite good, although not really to our taste. But I think there was one box between two men, or perhaps three, and then if one always didn't like a certain tin, we'd swap it about, you know, things like that. And then we were issued so many fags free. I can't remember what they were, but they were very strong.
And did you have any accidents with these primitive heating arrangements you described?
Yeah, that was when we were in reserve, though. I can remember the dugout next to us. That went up in flames, and there was bullets flying everywhere, and that's the only one I can remember, but I can remember that. And there was also another incident up there. I don't know their names, but I know this fella, because you've got to remember it was dark at night, very dark. You couldn't see anyone. And of course, you had a password if anyone came along the trenches at night and you gave a password, like fish, and you would have to answer chips. And he gave this password, which wasn't answered, and I think he'd done it about three times. And he was so frightened, he shot, and it happened to be his best mate, and he killed him.
Why did this chap not reply?
Don't know. Whether he'd forgot or what, I don't know. But I can remember this fella was very suicidal, and they moved him round from company to company. And but whatever happened, I don't know. I can't remember. And then you had recognition strips for the planes at the rear of the hills, which were set in different patterns each day. And if the Americans would probably bomb you if these patterns weren't in the correct order. So they had to be changed each day.
Did that ever happen?
Not to us, but I think that did happen to one or two people. I think I think there was some Turkish what got bombed. Stick in my memory that something like that. These Turkish soldiers got bombed by mistake, by what they call now friendly fire, don't they?
Which unit were you in of the Royal Fusiliers? Which company and platoon?
C Company I was in.
And the platoon?
7th Platoon. And we had two South Korean soldiers with us, the Rocks, they were called. Republic of Korea soldiers, two to a platoon, I think it was. And the two we had with us, I've also got a photograph of them. They both got killed. One was a school teacher and the other one was his pupil, funnily enough. Lee Dong Jin was the eldest, and Lee Chol Ju, he was the youngest one. And we used to keep them supplied with toothpaste and soup and things like that, because they got paid practically nothing. Their wages was nothing. Terrible.
How did they get killed?
They both got killed, I believe, by shell splinters. Yeah. I know one of them, the youngest one, he just had a very... That was on stand too, one night, when he got killed. Very near direct hit, but all he had was a very small, tiny little hole in his stomach when they found him.
Now,
the just to interrupt you, all the chaps I went out with all returned without any trouble. There was only one, Frost, his name was, because we used to call him Jack. He lived at Norwich. He used to work for Norwich Union, and he was in the mortar platoon, and apparently one of the mortars came out and exploded and he got shrapnel in his back. But he was the only one who I know, who I joined up with, who got injured.
On the patrols that you were on, did you do any patrols which took you deep into no man's land?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Can you describe those?
Well, there was fighting patrols which consisted of several men. They call them fighting patrol because what you would actually do is go looking for trouble, if you like. There was listening patrols. Perhaps two blokes would go out where they were just trying to find out things. Recce patrols, all different sorts of patrol. But they were very frightening. You just imagine walking about in the pitch black in a paddy field, sinking up to your knees, stumbling, and you're trying to keep quiet and not knowing what's out there or who's out there. Very frightening.
Did you ever bump into the enemy on patrol?
No, I didn't, thankfully, but some of them did. There was one incident, Pimlico, I think it was. I think, don't know if it was D Company. I know they got hit. The worst I had, one of the worst, was when we were up the Hook. Like I was telling you, the Duke of Wellington's got hit this night, and we were on standby. I could picture this battle going on now. Anyway, next day we went back to our reserve camp, and we were sleeping. And I was sleeping with John Fox, and I woke up and I remember him being called out, and the officer was having a word with him. And when he come back in, John said, "You'll never guess where we're going." And I said, "Where?" He said, "Up the Hook." And when he said that, I just shook. Anyway, we went up the Hook, and which was devastated. Then all the trenches were blown in, and all the time we were up there, they were carrying these dead bodies, these Chinese, and the stench was terrible. And the people who were carrying them in had to have masks over the faces. You can imagine they're just decomposing. And the worst incident for me out there was one of our stand patrols was Gwyn, Nelly Gwyn we used to call him, another one Miller, who I met recently again at a reunion, we used to call him Daisy, and two other fellas. And they got hit this night on this stand patrol by the Chinese, and we had to go out, this officer, that was John Fox, myself, I used to have a Bren gun then, and the others on this patrol, we went out to see what was happening. And they left me on this, I was told to stay on this ridge while they went over. I was on cover fire, if you like, if they came back in a hurry. And they went over this ridge and they got hit by the Chinese. They didn't have any casualties, but they pulled back. We were all told to get back up the hill. And, one of the blokes' names was Batchelor. And I remember he got shot in the buttocks. And then John Fox took the patrol out again. And Nellie Gwynn, they found him. He'd been shot in the head, or he had a bullet in the head. And the others were missing. I don't know who the other two were, but one, like I said, one of them was Miller, who I met recently. He was taken prisoner of war. And the rumour was that Nellie Gwynn sort of resisted being taken, or he was wounded, and rather than taken back with him, they just shot him. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But anyway, he got killed. And I think that was about the most frightening experience I had, although it was always frightening up the hook.
What could you witness on that occasion yourself?
Well, I'd never witnessed what the Chinese, do you mean?
Of anything at all, when all that was going on.
Well, like I said, I was on, they told me to stand on this spur as covering fire. They went over the spur, which I couldn't see. I was there in case they had to retreat and the Chinese come after them. I was there for covering fire. So what actually went on over the spur, I don't know.
You could just hear noises?
Yeah, plenty of shooting, hand grenades being thrown, things like that. And they had what they call burp guns, which just sounded like burp as they went off. Very fast rate of fire, but not very effective. If you got shot at, say, 25 yards or something by a burp gun, your chances of surviving was very good because they weren't that good a gun. Great rate of fire, but not very efficient. And I think that's what Batchelor got shot by. He must have, don't I think. And then you had your nights at A Echelon. You went back once a night, one night in every so often, so you could have a good rest, a shower, good night's sleep, a good meal, perhaps go to pictures, something like that. And that happened every so often.
Did you ever see any Chinese, any enemy?
Only at a distance, on the hills opposite, you'd spot them now and again. They used to broadcast to you from hidden, like a tannoy system, if you like, and they would tell you it was the Yanks who started the war, and give yourself up and you'll be treated well as a prisoner and all that sort of thing. And then you'd have all planes flying over their hills at night doing the same thing, loud speaking from a aeroplane, giving them all propaganda. And that particular Christmas they crept up to our wire, never heard them, they're crafty devils, and laid Christmas cards, surrender cards, diaries, which I can show you, I've got some now, and left them all on the barbed wire. They all should have been confiscated, but we kept some.
Did their propaganda have any effect, do you think?
No. The blokes just kept them for souvenirs. I don't think any... I think we all knew that... Well, we wouldn't have gave ourselves up anyway, but if you did, you had a a good idea how you'd be treated. Not very well, I don't think. And some of the books I've read since then confirmed that.
So what was morale like in your unit?
The morale was high. Oh yes, very good. Of course, you're frightened and people were wishing the time away and roll on the mob and things like that, but morale was high and they would all help each other, you know. There was...
Were they mostly Londoners in your unit?
Later on, not when I first went there, it consisted of us. There was Norfolk, Suffolk, Beds and Hearts. There was even Welsh. There was all sorts, which made up the contingent as they came out to make the strength up, because when they left, they were stationed in Germany. And when they left Germany, because a lot of the fellas' time was up, or that wasn't worth their while going to Korea, because by the time they got there, it'd be time to come home. Another interesting thing there, what happened? Why the oversight, I don't know, but there was several there who signed to go to Korea. And when they got to Korea, after a few weeks, of course, find out what it was like, they didn't really like it. And apparently they found out they hadn't signed this particular document. I think that consisted of about half a dozen blokes anyway. When they had them before the CO, they wouldn't sign this document for love or money, so they had to send them home. They weren't too pleased. That was another little incident.
Were they Fusiliers?
Yeah, Fusiliers, yeah. They had been in Germany, and apparently they'd signed, or perhaps signed some document that they would go to Korea, but there was some document they hadn't signed. Don't know the full details, but I know they wouldn't sign afterwards and they had to send them home. And the CO wasn't too chuffed about that.
Were there any particular personalities that you remember from Korea?
Not really. The regiment at that time, you never really met as a regiment, only in reserve. You're always in your own little pockets, if you like, you know, of platoons and sections, because a lot of the time is spent up the line. So you were with a particular group nearly all the time. And then there was Panman John, we could see that, the four searchlights, they were on all night. That was to stop them being bombed, I suppose. But you could see that all the time.
Did you ever hear of the actor Michael Caine?
Michael Caine was in... I didn't personally know him then, and even if I did, I wouldn't know who he was. But he was in... Number 9 platoon, and a friend of mine, funnily enough, he lived just over there, he was in 9 platoon,